Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're going to be talking about guns and violence on the program today. People often join these two. Is that a correct joining of those two subjects? Of course, we're talking about deadly shootings at the Empire State Building, at the Sikh Temple, a movie theater in Colorado. Unfortunately, these are not totally unusual headlines. These are just the recent ones. Is America more violent than other countries? Where do guns fit in? Are guns to blame? What, if anything, should we do? We're going to be talking about this with the four guests and hopefully your comments as well. We'll be bringing in the mayor of Park City, Dana Williams, who has joined Mayors Against Illegal Guns, Marcy Goodman, adjunct assistant professor of sociology at University of Utah, Josh Cantor, founder of the Alliance for a Better Utah, and Clark Aposhian, chairman of Utah Shooting Sports Council. And we welcome all of our guests with us for the hour. The number to call is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. Let me start with you, Clark Aposhian, chairman of Utah Shooting Sports Council, and I think you wear many other hats. I pulled up the website, NRI-certified training counselor, Also, chairman of Utah Self-Defense Instructors Network and with Utah Shooting Sports Council. Welcome to the program, by the way.
Thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate you having me on.
So when you hear an introduction like that, and you probably know that when there are deadly shootings, you're going to have a program like this, and you've been on such programs, what is your thought? Here we go again, talking about the guns.
Well, that's okay, because the more we talk about firearms, when we talk about violence, the truth is bound to come out, and it gets people talking. It enlarges the debate, if nothing else. Guns and violence are not inexorably linked in any way whatsoever. You can have guns and not have violence. You can have violence without firearms. So, you see that in places like Britain. Britain has 2.5 times the crime rate, the violent crime rate that the U.S. does.
Hmm. Let me bring in Marcy Goodman with the University of Utah. I did have a question about that. Mr. Aposhian makes reference to that. Welcome to the program, by the way. And where does America fit? It seems like with the headlines, we're one of the most violent places on earth, but maybe that's just the headlines overwhelming us.
Well, good morning, and I hate to be the bearer of neutral news, but all of our empirical evidence and statistics have proven valid for both sides of the gun control issue. That's why it's so difficult to determine the obvious answers or effects. I remember years ago being on a debate team in college, and we were still debating this same issue, and all of these years later, we still have it on the table. And so to say we are a more violent society, we have more guns than any other society on earth, but violence, as Clark did say, takes many guises, and guns would be just one of them.
So we're sort of in the middle, is what you're saying.
Well, I would say that as a criminology professor, we don't take sides on gun control. We simply present the various data and the Supreme Court rulings and look at the statistics and say that violence can be made with guns or clubs or knives or whatever is handy, including fists, such as in domestic violence. Mm.
Mr. Aposhian, I'll bring in my other two guests here just momentarily. Mr. Aposhian, I want to go back to you. Violence, I guess, starts in the heart. If a person's going to be violent, they're going to be violent. But if you have a gun handy, doesn't that exacerbate the problem?
Well, it certainly makes it easier. I'll admit it certainly makes it easier to be violent, but it also makes it a lot easier to defend yourself, and I guess you have to look at the cost versus benefit. There certainly are a lot more people defending themselves or protecting themselves against violent crime than there are those that are committing it. I mean, if that were true, if what you say were true, then Utah would be an extremely violent place because of our very permissive use of firearms here in the nation, probably more than any other state, yet we have one of the very lowest rates of violent crime.
Just a couple minutes, we're going to bring in Josh Cantor. A very interesting article, Guns and Insider Trading, an op-ed in the Salt Lake Tribune. I want to bring this in, but Mayor Williams can only be with us, I think, for another 10 minutes. I want to bring him in. Mayor of Park City, and I believe you have joined Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
Yes, we actually have, and we were contacted by Mayor Bloomberg's office, and I actually took it to the city council, had them read the website, review what they were talking about, and the council unanimously supported joining the group. I think, you know, there was a couple of different things that they were originally talking about, which had to do with the use of illegal weapons that were being shipped into Mexico, and aside from the federal fiasco associated with that, we thought that was a relatively good cause. I think there were two other. There's one pending piece of legislation and another law that was passed having to do with the retention of records on gun sales and the fact that people are allowed to delete the background checks within 24 hours of selling a weapon. And so it thwarts law enforcement's efforts to find people when a weapon is used. And I guess, you know, personally, I have certain concerns about the use of automatic and semi-automatic weapons, clips with 50 bullets, and there's only one use for those. And I did hear the gentleman a minute ago talking about the protection in crime, and CNN actually just did a big story on it, and less than 1% of crime, according to them, is thwarted by someone who actually has a gun. So I kind of disagree with that argument that, you know, having people armed stops crime. The statistics just don't show that. So, you know, we got involved in it. The latest program that the mayor's group is following now is this reciprocity between states, and the fact that, 20 states so far have said, yes, we're going to have reciprocity, but yet the criteria for getting the gun to begin with changes according to states. So, you know, I think we're concerned about, you know, if you standardize the laws across the country in terms of background checks and mental health checks and things like that, that would be one thing. But where states have different laws on obtaining a weapon, the idea that you can obtain it in one state and then just go into another state and carry a concealed weapon, there's concerns about that.
So, Mayor, do you think you're out of step with the general opinion on this in Utah?
That might be an understatement, but it's interesting. There's an article that's on that website of a poll that was done strictly of NRA members, and it was talking about the use of illegal weapons in crime, and there was really not a lot of argument, even from quite a few members of the NRA, in terms of something needs to be done about that. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those things that, in our state especially, because there are so many weapons that it might not necessarily be a popular thing, but no one is, at least in my opinion, in our involvement, and it's not to try to take away anybody's Second Amendment rights.
Mr. Posen, back to you. The mayor was talking there about, automatic weapons, semi-automatic weapons with a lot of clips. As he phrased it, there's only one use for that. Do you support more regulation?
Well, I asked the mayor, do I support? You know what? I reject the question. I asked the mayor, what is an automatic weapon? I want to know if he actually knows what an automatic weapon is.
Well, my understanding is that several bullets can be fired with one squeeze of the trigger.
Okay, so that is a fully automatic weapon. They are required to be federally registered. You have to go through the complete background check with photographs, fingerprints. There's usually a 7-month waiting period to purchase these, and they are extremely expensive. We're talking on the order of somewhere between $20,000 and $35,000 per weapon. Are those the weapons that you're talking about that you would like to restrict further?
I certainly have concerns about semi-automatic weapons also.
So why did you bring up automatic weapons? Is it to elicit that knee-jerk response? you know, to get people frightened of these automatic weapons, of which there are very few and almost never ever used in a crime. Is that what you're talking about? Or were you more, to be more honest, are you talking about a semi-automatic firearm?
I think both actually fit the criteria.
Okay. I just wanted to point out, Mayor, that what you're doing, people do see through. I mean, when you talk about automatic weapons and try to get that initial response from people, we're going to call you on it every time. Mm-hmm. And an automatic weapon is, as I described, NFA required and fully federally registered. Mm-hmm. They are not used in crimes here in Utah or across the nation, a legally owned fully automatic weapon.
But
a semi-automatic weapon.
Let me interject to some
Yes, go ahead.
Right here,
go ahead.
So we can get some perspective, because I think what we've got is a perception issue here. We have about 310 million Americans, and we have around 300 million firearms, but only 100 million are in that category that we call handguns. In a poll that was done by Gallup about 18 months ago, 67% of Americans indicated that the reason they had handguns was to protect themselves against crime, and yet only one out of every 240 people here in America will be a victim of violent crimes with a gun. And so we're talking about a perception issue. We're this nitpicking about whether something is automatic or semi-automatic. Most Americans who own guns own them to, as they say, protect themselves. But I think we forget that we have about one gun of some type for every person, man, woman, and child here in America. So we are a gun-bearing society.
Mm, thank you for that. Let me have the mayor respond, and then I think the mayor has to go here. I want to have you respond to whatever you'd like to Mr. Pozhan, and then answer the question, what particularly would you like to see done to reduce violence?
Well, I think, one, you know, the continuing education on the safe use of firearms is certainly probably the first and foremost thing that needs to be done. You know, it was interesting when there was the school shooting up in Oregon in right outside of Eugene, and there was an author by the name of Ken Kesey who was in the hospital when the kids were being brought in, and his grandkids said, you know, tell me about gun ownership, Grandpa. And the kid said, well, wait a minute, if they can have the guns, why do they need these certain types of bullets? And I think that's one of the other big issues, is that why should people be able to buy armor-piercing bullets for target practice? I think that the, you know, we've had the discussion as a community just in terms of mostly the illegal use of firearms. That was why we originally got involved in the organization. We did not put out a statement when our attorney general started talking about the reciprocity between states, because we didn't feel we had enough information about it. But I think the continued dialogue about violence is probably the most important issue that we were trying to address.
Thank you, Mayor. I know you have to go. We'll let you go there. I appreciate
okay.
you being on. Mayor of Park City, Dana Williams, who has recently joined Mayors Against Illegal Guns. We're talking about guns and violence. We have with us Clark Pozhan, chairman of Utah Shooting Sports Council. We have, I'm not sure which line this is, Addison.
It's number
four. There we go. Okay. Got a little confused there. We have this Josh Cantor, founder of the Alliance for Better Utah, and Marcy Goodman, adjunct assistant professor of sociology at University of Utah. If you'd like to join this conversation, it's 1-800-826-1495. 1-800-826-1495. I'm going to ask our guests about a rather provocative op-ed piece I read recently. Jeff Clausen, a physician in Utah, I'm sure you all read this, repeal the Second Amendment. We'll see if that lights Mr. Pozhan's hair on fire here. But guns and insider trading is an interesting connection. And we bring in Josh Cantor, who is, as I mentioned, founder of the Alliance for Better Utah. Tell us, first of all, Mr. Cantor, what the Alliance for the Better Utah is.
Tom, thanks for having me this morning. The Alliance for Better Utah is a year-round multi-issue organization discussing and being a voice in progressive issues around the state.
And your main point, what you're trying to do is you think there can be a good balance of personal and societal interests, specifically with regard to guns.
That was the point of the op-ed, yes. I mean, you know, as Marcy indicated earlier in the show, this is an issue, obviously, that's been on the table forever. In my case, it was a central issue of politics as I was a kid in the 70s and certainly into the 80s. And the arguments haven't gone away. I mean, the arguments Clark's making, the arguments that we're hearing so far on the show are all the same arguments we've been making for the last 40 years, and they're not particularly effective. Nobody's budging on their opinion. So the idea behind doing this op-ed was, how can we find another way of starting to look at this and realize that this doesn't have to be a conversation at the polar extremes? It's actually interesting that on the same day the Tribune published, of course, the op-ed that you also referred to about repealing the Second Amendment. And this doesn't have to be about selling out your values and rejecting the Second Amendment, although keep in mind the Second Amendment interpretation changed dramatically in 2008 with the Supreme Court opinion in that year, different from what it had been when most of us were growing up. And yet realizing that this doesn't have to be, I have an unfettered right to guns, and I have a desire to take everybody's guns away. There's a place in society for both of those perspectives, and compromise doesn't have to be a dirty word. And the idea of linking this to insider trading was to say, well, let's go think out of the box and realize this isn't this extreme notion of different perspectives that has always been put to the gun discussion.
We do have a couple of callers waiting. I want you to tell us, though, briefly what this analogy to insider trading. Explain that a little further.
So the analogy is actually fairly simple. You know, if you take this notion that most people who are in favor of guns will take the notion that the Second Amendment provides this unfettered right to gun ownership and to gun use, and then obviously there are at the other extreme people who, you know, are interested in taking everybody's guns away. The idea, again, was to look at insider trading, which if you look at a pure free market economic model, and I actually had done my college economics honors thesis on insider trading in the stock market, so that's obviously why this came to my mind and looked at it. The free market analysis says markets are more efficient. If you allow insider trading, you're really not stopping anybody who wants to participate in the activity by regulating against it. That's kind of the guns don't kill people, people kill people argument. And so the idea was, again, to kind of look at it and say, but we've decided, you know, in certain instances, constitutional rights are still not unfettered. You can't go into a crowded movie theater and yell fire, notwithstanding the fact that we have free speech under the Constitution. You can't necessarily go and society has decided that insider trading is basically bad. There's a societal benefit if we can curb any of it at all, let alone all of it. Obviously, we're not curbing all of it. There's always going to be illegal trading. But those kinds of activities are curbed by reasonable regulation, crafted carefully, and that can be applied to the gun debate, which is to say that, you know, whether it's automatic weapons, whether it's assault rifles, whether it's, you know, any of the different things, whether that Mayor Williams was talking about, or that Clark's been talking about, or that Marcy was talking about, this idea of reasonable regulation can be brought to the table.
Which are already, by the way, in place and sometimes not totally enforced.
That's absolutely an excellent point.
And then, as Mayor Williams said, not consistently applied. You know,
right.
It's clearly a question of whether, you know, there was only 7 states in the country that require private sale background checks. Mm. Is that consistent with then being able to turn around and carry your weapon across state lines, et cetera? So it's the idea behind the whole thing from my perspective was to, again, get that conversation restarted and keep it moving in a positive direction. And I thought some of the responses to, at least to my op-ed, were very interesting, including people who were you know, diehard Second Amendment folks who were saying, okay, I can have a reasonable conversation with you. And that, to me, is really the key here, because otherwise we've been beating at each other between the NRA and the gun control lobby, again, for 40 years, at least since I was a kid, and having this conversation over America is X times more violent, or, you know, 200 legally justified self-defense homicides a year versus 30,000 gun deaths a year, how does that balance out? I'd be happy to have that debate with Clark, for example. It sounds like it'd be a lot of fun. But on the other hand, that's the same debate we've been having for 40 years, and neither side is winning.
Yeah,
neither side is bringing down Aurora shootings or Empire State Building shootings or the Sikh Temple shootings. Those things are happening all the time.
And that's the question I want to get to, kind of move in that direction as we move along with the program. What can be done? I think we're all dismayed by these things. We are talking with Clark Kapojian, chairman of the Utah Shooting Sports Council, Josh Cantor, founder of the Alliance for a Better Utah, and Marcy Goodman, adjunct assistant professor of sociology at University of Utah. And we're talking about violence in America. Are guns involved? What can be done? We bring in a couple of callers now. Let's go first to Derek in Logan. Derek, thanks for waiting, and go ahead with your question or comment.
Oh, no, thank you for letting me on. I did a research paper a few years ago when I was in college. I was curious just how many laws, federal level laws, affected all the states concerning gun ownership. And, you know, this, granted, this is a little bit out of date, but at the time there was 20,000 laws concerning legal ownership of the guns. And that seems like more than enough to me. You know, so all this new debate, new laws, criminals don't obey laws. You can pass a law and that's not going to stop a criminal. And I had one other point I'd like to make, and I'll take the answers off the air. They made a comment about armor-piercing rounds at one point, and, criminals wear bulletproof vests as well. I just want to make that point, and I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Derek. Let me go first to Mr. Kapojian on those two questions.
Or comments. That's a good point. I have not counted all the laws, but I'm told that there are about 22,000 firearm laws between the various states and the federal government. And I agree with them. Now, in fact, this even brings up the reciprocity that the mayor had talked about before, in that, whereas states may have different crimes, they all must adhere to the federal gun control or federal gun laws, regardless of, what states you're in. And the armor piercing, absolutely. Armor piercing, again, is one of those buzzwords that elicits that response of, oh, my gosh, why would people need an armor piercing round? Well, they don't even need an armor piercing round. We're talking about ballistic vests in which any deer rifle will go right through in one side and out the other without having any armor piercing capabilities.
To the other point, I assume you agree with Derek that there are a bunch of laws and the laws we have are sufficient.
Exactly, and someone had pointed out earlier, let's enforce these laws. We make no apologies for criminals breaking the law or anybody breaking the law. Let's enforce them. Let's enforce them up to the limit, to prosecute them and convict them, put them in jail, and let's not hear from them again. Exactly right. Somebody made a comment about yelling fire in a theater. Well, yeah, that's a good point, and we do regulate firearms such that you can't do that. But what we're afraid of and what happens often in some of these states is, you can't yell fire in a theater even when there is a fire. That's what we're getting at. I mean, not in a real fire situation, but that's what we're getting at is that with gun control laws, is that they don't want us to yell fire in a theater even when there is a fire and it needs to be yelled.
We'll have several follow-up questions for our other guests. We'll get to those after we bring in our next caller, Melon Laverkin. Mel, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom, and good morning to your guests. It's been said, but I'm going to say it again. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Now, Tom, I've shaken your hand at one time or another, and I want you to understand that what I'm going to describe is not a threat on your life or the life of anyone listening to the program today.
Okay, I'll try not to take this as a threat. Okay.
Okay. If I want you dead, you will be dead. I know how to make an electric chair, a gas chamber. I can use a motor vehicle, and, you've seen that in the newspapers. It's not hard to train animals. I know what a garrote is. I've seen a fellow throw a screwdriver at the ceiling and stick it in a piece of wood. If I want you dead, you will be dead, and I don't need a firearm to do it. Mm-hmm. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I understood. Thanks, Mel. Thanks for calling. Mel called, as well as Derek, 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. We're talking about guns and violence, as Mr. Cantor pointed out, it's an old, old subject, and he's trying to move us maybe in a new direction. We're going to try to do that as we move along. We've got another half an hour of the program to come. We're talking with Marcy Goodman, adjunct assistant professor of sociology at University of Utah, Josh Cantor, founder of the Alliance for a Better Utah, and Clark Aposhian, chairman of Utah Shooting Sports Council. And of course, we're talking about this because we keep having these deadly shootings, and we're going to ask what can be done. The number 1-800-826-1495. In fact, I'm going to turn right now to Marcy Goodman. It's a long litany of these depressing shootings and people dying in sometimes in large numbers. The case of the theater shooting in Aurora, Colorado, and the Sikh temple recently. How much do guns enter in, or not much, or a lot, and what can be done about this violence?
Well, let me address something that we have a kind of a buzz term in sociology, and we call them risk factors or risk assessments. The problem with any kind of discussion about violence itself, whether we're talking about terrorism or gun violence or domestic violence, is that we have people involved. If I was a chemistry professor, I might have you come into the lab and mix the same chemicals together, and you would have the same reaction every time. But when we look at individuals, we can only say certain people have certain risk factors. For example, we can look at aspects that relate to poverty or growing up in high crime areas in cities that may have high incidences of gang violence or other types of problems. And so when we ask our questions about who's going to be the next James Holmes or who will be the next Jared Loughner, one of the things that we have to ask ourselves is, how are we going to discern who we think is going to be a problem in our society? We already have laws that prohibit people with criminal records from buying guns. But as was mentioned, they can certainly find other ways of perpetrating violence. John Kennedy himself said a few years before he was assassinated that if someone desired badly enough to kill a president, that they could do it, and that proved to be true. And so we have to remember that these are people that are involved. These are not simply statistics or data, but risk factors matter. If we look at Klebold and Harris, the Columbine killers, the school shooters, we have certain risk factors that we could see in hindsight that appeared to be perfectly true. Both Jared Loughner and James Holmes, paranoid schizophrenics. And so we have certain people that are higher risk than others. Can they still get guns? Can they still perpetrate violence? Of course. But as a society, perhaps we should be a little more concerned about people and their mental states and their cognitive situations, as well as those who are on the extreme that are paranoid schizophrenics, such as Holmes and Loughner are.
Mm. So is it better education, better mental health, more religion?
Well, I think that as a community, we have, in essence, taken our mental health system and cut it to the bone, that certainly we could think about a better way in which to evaluate kids in violence. I teach a course in juvenile delinquency at the university, and for every $1,000 we spend after a crime is committed, we only spend a dollar or two before that crime is committed, and yet that money is much more effectively used. But we have a tendency to throw money at problems such as crimes that have already happened. And I personally would like to see more money spent in prevention.
We are talking about guns and violence. Clark Aposhian, chairman of Utah Shooting Sports Council, with us. Josh Cantor, founder of the Alliance for a Better Utah, and Marcy Goodman. You just heard from her right there, adjunct assistant professor of sociology at University of Utah. We heard earlier from Mayor of Park City, Dana Williams, who is with the Mayors Against Illegal Guns. You're welcome to join this conversation at 1-800-826-1495. We have about another 15 minutes, 1-800-826-1495. Many other things to follow up with Mr. Cantor and Mr. Potion, but we bring in another caller. This is Kevin in Logan. Kevin, thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you.
Go ahead with your question or comment.
All right. Well, I just had a couple things. First of all, I want to explain I'm a liberal, and I mean that in the literal sense. I'm a liberal in the sense of First Amendment rights, and I'm a liberal in Second Amendment rights. I believe that that amendment should be interpreted liberally as it is in the current dialogue. But there's a portion of the conversation that's lacking in that we're talking about gun violence. We're talking about violence and guns. But the thing that guns do, and I say this as a guy who has a concealed carry permit, just graduated from Utah State University, utilizes the fact that we are allowed to carry on campus in Utah. But guns allow people to be more efficiently lethal than, say, a steel pipe or anything else. It's just like a fast car enables you to drive a lot faster and kill yourself if you crash, whereas if you're driving a slow car or riding on a horse, you don't have that ability. And so we have speed limits. And so I think there is, like the op-ed writer from Salt Lake Tribune said, a middle ground that we need to arrive at where we acknowledge that even though guns don't cause violence, they are a tool that enables more efficient lethality. And if that's not acknowledged by both sides as we go into this debate, no one is going to make any progress.
Thanks, Kevin, for that. Appreciate that. Let me start on a response first with Mr. Posh and then go to Mr. Cantor. So the more deadly lethality, but more to the point, is there a middle ground? Do you believe what I hear from gun rights people is that I get the impression, and I want to see if you agree with this, that many of the people on that camp believe that, well, we've gone just about as far as we can go. We're not going to go any further.
Let me say that I agree with Kevin, the caller, that I absolutely agree. They do make a much more efficient way, except they also make, as I had said before, a much more efficient self-defense tool. Let's take in the case of a woman defending herself against a man. Makes much more sense for her to carry a firearm to defend herself than to go hand-to-hand or a club or a knife or something like that.
Yeah, so self-defense.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I also agree with, so he was looking for some consensus. We've got consensus on his issue, and I also agree with Marcy, in fact, and Josh on many things, too. I think he chose a very good forum in that, if you notice what Marcy was doing, she's putting the emphasis on the individual and not on the firearm, and I appreciate that.
But I think you can appreciate's maybe the wrong word. You maybe understand where some people are coming from. They're just so frustrated with the deaths, and they look at this instrument which ratchets up the lethality.
But Tom, we live in a society that looks for easy answers, and no pun intended. But we love the silver bullet. We love the idea that we can take something as complex as human violence and boil it down to whether we should have a gun or not. And it's much more complex than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Poshin, you're going to say something, and then I'll go to Mr. Cantor.
No, go ahead. Let's go to Mr. Cantor.
Yeah, yes. Mr. Cantor, you're maybe some hopefulness from our last caller. Kevin agrees with you that we should find a middle ground. Do you think that's possible?
Well, I do think it's possible, and again, I think some of the things that you're referring to. Obviously, we have a big education problem in this country over this issue, and it is because I think in large part people get so drawn to the polar extremes. You know, the earlier caller who said, "If I want you dead, you'll be dead." That may be true, but if that's true, by definition, my carrying a gun is not going to change that. You know, Clark's comments about self-defense. Obviously, he believes those are correct. I tend to believe the statistics that now we're going back into kind of the old way of thinking of this, but you're 4.5 times more likely to be shot in an assault if you're carrying a gun. You're 22 more times likely to have a gun used in the house for a suicide, a homicide, or unintentional shooting than self-defense. But ultimately, I think the caller, you know, is correct in that there is a middle ground. And whether or not, by the way, going back even a couple callers, if there are 20,000 bad laws on the books, that shouldn't stop us from looking at what is the good law in today's environment. You know, we have a terrible, terrible habit in Utah is we pass 900 new bills a year in the Utah legislature in a 45-day session. There's got to be some bad bills sitting out there from a few years ago, and nobody goes back and cleans this stuff up. So to use it as pure rhetoric to say, oh, there's 20,000 gun laws, you know, the reality is that's not the important one. The one that says we're not going to sell magazines with more than 10 bullets wasn't renewed by Congress in 2004. Mm-hmm. So what's happening to the good laws? Mm-hmm. How can we have a real conversation about what it is that will stop people from not necessarily perpetrating some of these acts? You know, the reality is maybe the Aurora shooter would have slipped through any number of gun laws and picked up those weapons and shot the people in Aurora. Is it really likely that somebody would have been able to stop him? You know, look at the New York shooting, which is, I think, one of the things that you said started the idea for this show. And, of course, 9 people were injured in that shooting, aside from the guy who was obviously the shooter and his target, all of whom were injured by police fire and ricocheting bullets. This is not necessarily a situation where just because somebody is carrying a gun, they know how to use it, they're properly trained, it's safely stored at home. You know, again, we've got to get away from the notion that somehow everybody on the liberal or left side is trying to take away your guns and not let you go to hunt or not let you go to target practice or not let you do whatever you want to do. But there are reasonable expectations about society as a whole, and where, frankly, even coming in the self-defense side or coming to somebody else's defense where, you know, you're the old saying about, you know, you're, my right to punch you stops where your nose begins, or however that phrase goes. You know, I think it also can be looked at in any number of other things that we've done in society. If somebody told you you're 4.5 times more likely to die if you smoke, which is, I don't know if that's the right statistic, but that's the gun statistic, you know, people have adjusted their thinking by being educated about what smoking does, and yet we've perpetrated this rhetoric in the gun debate instead of looking at what can make us safer as I have a constitutional right and you can't touch it.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about guns and violence on the program today. We have another 10 minutes. We're going to take a short break here and come back with Marcy Goodman, who's adjunct assistant professor of sociology at University of Utah. Josh Cantor, you just heard from him right there, founder of the Alliance for a Better Utah. We're also talking with Clark Aposhian, chairman of the Utah Shooting Sports Council. Back after a brief break.
Support for Access Utah comes from the Utah Humanities Council, enriching cultural, intellectual, and civic life by providing opportunities for all Utahns to explore life's most engaging questions and the wonders of the human experience.
Europe's cultural borders are blending and blurring these days, especially in music. Immigrants from Africa, the Middle East, and Asia have brought new musical influences. And today's sophisticated recording techniques are creating hip global sounds, heard in clubs from Paris and Madrid to Frankfurt and Milan. I'm Rosalie Howarth. Join me for Eurogroove, the next Putumayo World Music Hour.
Friday night at 10 on Utah Public Radio.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by Dr. Kyle Breitenbach, practicing family health care at Basin Clinic in Vernal since 1987, offering a variety of medical services, including dermatologic, surgery, and preventative care. Information is at basinclinic.com.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. Another 10 minutes in the program to conclude our discussion on guns and violence. Of course, this is prompted by deadly shootings at the Empire State Building and the Sikh Temple and movie theater in Colorado. Unfortunately, these are not totally unusual headlines, and we're asking the questions, is America more violent than other countries? We've asked Dr. Goodman that question. She said we're somewhere in the middle. We can't pin it directly on guns. But where do guns fit in? Should there be more regulation? Are we about the right balance with the regulation of guns? And we're talking about guns and violence. Another 10 minutes, as I mentioned, left. And you're welcome to join this conversation at 1-800-826-1495. Toll free, 1-800-826-1495. Or you can email us at upraxis@gmail.com. upraxis@gmail.com. Mr. Kenner, I wanted to follow up with what you were saying before the break. You were saying that we shouldn't point unduly to all the laws on the books because some of those are outdated. I wonder, are there any specific laws that you would point to that you would like to see enacted, good laws, new laws regarding guns?
Well, that's a tough one. you know, I haven't stayed abreast of all the laws that are there. I mean, I do personally think we need strong background check laws. I think they should be consistent around the country. I think we need consistency in, you know, training and concealed weapons training, and especially if there's going to be, as Mayor Williams was talking about earlier, reciprocity across state lines. You know, there's been a number of articles recently about Utah becoming a permit mill for concealed weapon permits to be carried outside of the state. I personally think we ought to be back to this question of why does any rational human being walking around the streets need magazines with more than 10 bullets and the likes. I'm not trying to get Clark upset with the use of automatic or semi-automatic terminology, but those are serious weapons that are generally not used for hunting and not really used for self-defense. I think people ought to take a look at the laws that are on the books and get rid of a few of them. I'm sure there are plenty of things there that really should, you know, go away, much like Utah just had the big lawsuit over licensing for hair braiding, right? I mean, it's just our legislatures around the country, it includes Congress and includes every state legislature, you know, get carried away and think they're solving a problem and create three problems in response. So there's plenty of cleaning up to do and plenty of good laws that could be written that hopefully keep one gun out of one mentally unstable person's hands and stops one Aurora shooting. And we may never know that actually stopped. There's no way, obviously, of, you know, Marcy's the expert on probably talking about that. I don't know how you prove, you're back to proving a negative that shooting didn't happen. But that's the price that society, as far as I believe, should be willing to pay to balance our constitutional right to bear arms and the damage that these weapons can do.
Mr. Pojanite, I'm going to have you respond to a couple of points that Josh Cantor made, but we do have a caller. I want to get to him. Tom in Green River. Tom, welcome to the program.
Howdy, sir. It's a good topic. I just wanted to say that in the end, I just want to be able to have something compatible to my enemy's firearms or even my military. Right now in Syria, I guess the military and the government's telling the people to give up their firearms or they're going to be slaughtered. And so I'm not saying that would happen here, but if the Chinese or whoever, I don't know, or our own government, if they have AR-15s or 308s or AK-47s, I think our society should have the same, should be able to own and operate certainly a 308, you know, not a shotgun or a handgun, because that's not going to cut it if all hell breaks loose. That's all I'm saying. I think we should have the equivalent.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Let me turn to, before I go to Mr. Opposition, Marcy Goodman. I don't know what the studies out there show. That's an argument you hear a lot, is better to have self-defense. But the argument I hear on the other side is the more guns there are, maybe the more likely that inadvertently we're going to have some fatalities.
Well, again, I'll refer to studies that indicate that out of the Americans that own non-hunting weapons, we own them. Two-thirds of us say we own them for our own protection. And yet, I mean, you look at a state like Utah in 2010, we had, 53 murders. And so the percentages, it's just what gets the headlines. Going back to who would we stop by certain laws, when George Bush left office after 9/11, one of the things that he said was that his administration had stopped hundreds of purported acts of terrorism that were never published. And so think about all of the police departments across the country that actually do intervene with people who are like the Jared Loughners or others who might have committed a crime had they not been stopped beforehand. We had a situation with a school shooting in Vernal where the boy who was planning to blow up some people and bring a gun to school was stopped beforehand. And so we don't often hear about how many of those that there are. And that's another important aspect. And yet when we think about 100 million handguns, I would say that as a people, we do believe in guns and we have guns. And the question is, how are we going to be better able to assess the risk factors of people who will use those in violent situations against others, such as Tucson or Aurora.
Mr. Potion, I know you probably want to respond to several points that have been made. One I'd like to start with you is a point that Mr. Cantor made. Maybe he's saying that we ought to look at some of the guns that aren't really used for anything else, hunting or anything.
Right. He said if they're not used for hunting or not used for self-defense, there are other reasons to own firearms. And the point is that until you start looking at patterns and trends, actual patterns, that's what I look at when we look at legislation. There's a problem indicated by a pattern, then okay. There is absolutely no pattern other than statistical blips on the scale regarding what they would term semi-automatic or military type looking type weapons. And so I'm going to end that at that. But then we've got U.S. v. Miller in the Supreme Court case that actually said in Victim that, yes, that the Second Amendment allows for the individual to have a firearm of the type commonly used by the military at the time. So that has been addressed. He talked about everything from a permit mill to magazine capacity. The Center for Disease Control in 2003 came out with their study that looked at many, many other studies as well, and said that the no gun control laws in place, including those that talked about waiting periods or registration or ban on certain firearms or magazine capacity, had any effect whatsoever on violence or crime, or certainly not, gun-related crime. And this was not an NRA-funded study in any way. This was from the CDC. And as far as magazine capacity goes, my gosh, this Jeffrey Johnson, the New York City shooter, had a firearm capable of holding 7 rounds total, and he killed one person. The police, however, were responsible for 9 injuries. They both had 17-round magazine capacity firearms. By that logic, should we take away the firearms or the magazine capacity, restrict that to law enforcement?
Let me, we're coming near the end of the program. I want to ask you, Mr. Posian, do you agree with Mr. Cantor that we ought to change this debate that we always have somehow, try to find some middle ground? Is there a middle ground?
Well, I think there's education. Education is always better than ignorance, and as we include individuals in this forum, which are actually looking for solutions, looking for problems, and identifying the actual problems, I think we'll get a lot farther.
And I'd like to get some final words from first Mr. Cantor and then Marcy Goodwin. Josh Cantor, final word on this.
Sure. I mean, I think there is a middle ground. I think that there's an honest debate that can occur about all these subjects, but people have to put the extreme rhetoric aside. You know, in Utah recently, we had the conversation last year about the elimination of a no-gun zone around schools. And the argument that was made in the legislature was because we didn't want to make inadvertent criminals of somebody who was carrying a firearm legally within 1,000 feet of school. So instead, we've taken away law enforcement's right to stop and question somebody carrying a gun near our kids. That's not an intellectually honest conversation about whether we can do something to protect our children.
And
we need to have this conversation in the center.
Thank you very much. Marcy Gooden, we'll give you the last word on this.
Well, I appreciate that, and thank you for allowing us to talk today about this important aspect. I think that as we, as thinking individuals, consider our options, we've got to remember that we are a society that has a gun for every single person in this country, and that we ought to have a way in which we can think about risk assessment and people who are most likely to use those weapons in ways that harm other people instead of in law-abiding ways.
We'll leave it there. We're out of time. We've been talking with Marcy Goodwin, adjunct assistant professor of sociology, University of Utah. Thanks so much. Josh Cantor, founder of the Alliance for a Better Utah, and Clark Aposhian, chairman of Utah Shooting Sports Council. Thanks to our callers as well. Join us tomorrow. We'll be talking with NPR Vice President Eric Newsom. He's written a new novel. That's coming up tomorrow.
Steve Eaton is a freelance writer who lives in Logan. He writes a column that appears in the Deseret News every other Saturday.
I can't believe you can just sit there eating popcorn while a train blasts through the room. I recently went to a movie where a train suddenly derails in surround sound right in the theater, and my body decided that the smartest thing it could do in response was to immediately switch rows, despite the fact that there were already people in my chosen destination. My kids call it the dance of death. I admit that the movements I make when I've been truly startled can look like a dance, perhaps the dance of an electrocuted zombie. This thing I do with my arms flailing like I'm drowning and my feet kicking like I've become a bad guy marching in a World War II movie can be entertaining to those who are expecting it. But to those who are not, however, it can prove a traumatic experience. So much so that some are tempted to mimic my actions, assuming that I must know something very important that they don't. As a general rule, if there are monsters in a movie, I'm not frightened if they stay in the movie. One night, my wife and I were watching the movie Alien on TV. At a critical point in the movie, we heard noises outside the house, and I decided to investigate, just in case those noises were coming from an alien who was not staying in the movie. It was an oil delivery man who had just filled our tank and knocked on our door to get us to sign for the delivery. When I opened the door and saw, unexpectedly, an awful, terrible, vicious, short, uniformed, bald-headed man standing right there, my body, without consulting my brain, decided it was probably an alien. I did one of the most prolonged, advanced dances of death I have ever done. It was after about 30 seconds of unrestrained, random movements that were accompanied by strange shouting noises coming from my face that the message got to my brain that I was witnessing not an alien, but a frightened and confused delivery man. He looked uncomfortable, as if he's trying to decide if he too should do the dance of death while running down our driveway. I felt foolish once the dancing stopped, and I thought I could explain my reaction away by just telling him the truth. "Oh, sorry about that," I said sheepishly. "You see, we were watching the movie Alien." The man now looked hurt, confused, and scared. "Do I look like an alien?" he said testily, forgetting his customer service training. That was an awkward moment, and I couldn't fix it. I'm guessing he got a new job because he never came back. I've always seen this as sort of a terribly misguided, mild superpower that never helps anyone and only hurts innocent people. It's a terrible burden to bear. However, I think the question needs to be raised. Just what if you and I were walking down a deserted alley one day and a giant alien really did suddenly appear in front of us? You could run away while I did the dance, and maybe, just maybe, the monster would run away too. I'll bet some monsters get scared at times. So next time you're in a movie theater and something really loud or scary happens and it's followed by a large fat man suddenly crashing onto your lap and blasting your popcorn sky high, don't shout at that man. It's probably me. And it's not my fault that my body decided to suddenly switch seats. If you're quiet, I'll probably get up, apologize, and excuse myself. If you scream, however, I'm likely to be startled again. And then you'll get to experience the dance of death up close and personal. And believe me, you won't like it. Just let that train crash in front of you while I go back to my seat. I can buy you some new popcorn. This is Steve Eaton.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by the Cash Chamber of Commerce. In 2012, Cash Chamber of Golf Tournament is at the Logan River Golf Course, Thursday, September 13th, 8 to 3. Registration and sponsor information is at cashchamber.com. The Cash Chamber of Commerce. Your success is our business.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.
At Utah Public Radio, we discuss current events, social issues, gardening tips, politics, talk with local authors, and many other important Utah-related subjects. On Access Utah, an original program produced by Utah Public Radio, I'm Addison Pace, production intern for Access Utah. Join us weekday mornings 9 to 10, Utah Public Radio, Utah's favorite public radio station, for providing your access to things that matter in Utah.